times, but then last week, our readings offer an integration of the messages that Jesus tries to convey to us. We hear it in a couple of our readings this morning. This parable of Luke seems to offer a profound contradiction to our sense of right or wrong. It smacks of ludicrous sensibilities, to say the least. And many a preacher has been really confounded by drawing out the message to be offered. I would posit that perhaps even Luke himself, as he wrote this, was perplexed. But let's journey together and try and untangle what this message is about money. There's similarities in this to the story of the prodigal son, the parables of the lost sheep, the lost coin, parables we've heard over the past few weeks, that precede this particular text. However, what's curious here is that the steward of dishonesty, he's not penitent. He's not sorry. So why would any character in this story be commended no less? Supposedly, the return on savings of the debtors are to be passed on to this manager in the form of a gift. So he's going to profit by this. So it's confusing to us when the master praises him for his craftiness. And what's even more unsettling is when Jesus praises the steward and commends his imitation. Are we getting this right? I mean, I'm terribly confused. How are we going to untangle this message? Well, let's go back by trying to gain a little bit of perspective on how it was in the early days. In our secular world, most of us assign other people's worth by what they own. We tend to hold up celebrities and billionaires as top players in our money-driven society. And others identify the most precious people according to what they can do for them. So we see this sort of as a quid pro quo sort of relationship. The Pharisees, we know, improperly valued money over people. We have to understand the Palestinian economics of the first century, so-called back there. The Roman occupation is what was happening in Israel at the time. And the rulers exploited their natural resources and the labor of people via a heavy taxation, very heavy. The rich people lived in the south of Judea, and the small farmers lived in the north of Galilee. The farmers, who were poor, they needed the wheat, they needed the oil and the wine to live on, but they often would trade those crops just to make a living, just to live. And the Romans would tax these small farmers, and the rich would exploit them by saying they would pay taxes in return for their land. So they're actually having less and less land, and less profit, and less money. So the rich got richer, while the poor got poorer. And the system continually exploited these poor. And if this really incensed Jesus, we can think back to him moving into the temple, and remember when he was saying, "Stop making my temple a den of robbers." He was doing this because of this unfair, really heavy taxation. It infuriated him. When rulers did want to move, they would send these mid-level managers to get their money. So the rulers felt that the farmers weren't being squeezed hard enough to produce. And these rich people thought farmers were lazy. They really wanted to increase the most return on their investment. So this manager, as a little man, was in a class between the rich and the poor. But he would profit by making these transactions and managing these small farmers. But this manager was different. He arranged things so that the poor would switch things up. In this scenario, the mid-manager kind of does a crafty form of accounting to ease the indebtedness of the poor. He made it a little easier, not perfect. But this parable, then, is really not about this evil mid-level manager and its terribleness, but somebody who really started to recognize the injustice of the system and wanted to turn it about a bit. So in theory, this could be called the parable of the steward who switched sides, because he was getting some empathy for these farmers. And Amos, in our reading this morning, Luke really calls this behavior out. He calls it out specifically before it even happened. Hear this, you that trample on the needy, and bring to ruin the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over, so that we can celebrate, and the Sabbath, so that we can offer wheat for sale? These were desperate farmers. And their exploitation is made and pointed to by the prophet Amos. Jesus is saying to us that money is not a measure of all things. Our use of money should be in service to relationships, not the other way around. Not relationships in service to money that we're very much accustomed and used to. And he goes on to say that we cannot serve two masters. You'll either hate God and love money, or hate money and love God. So if we think about this, I get caught up sometimes in either or thinking black and white. But we do have to think each time we make a transaction how we potentially can be made dirty in how we use our money. So it brings us to a level of consciousness we need to think about. We do in our lives, we have an economic ordering of things where we have to use our sensibilities. And it dictates the monetary transactions in society. And we can't get away from that. But as an example this morning, I want to point out a tendency in our culture that sees oceans and forests and soil and mountains as creation points that we don't really think about their inherent value much, but how can they serve us in a short-term profit for those at the top of our economy? How can we craft out a ski slope that's going to want all the skiers to come and ski down it so we can make a lot of money? We're being called out by younger generations on our stewardship of land. Money has brainwashed us, and money has blinded us. Jesus had an economic system where everyone mattered. Love of God. If you love God, everything else will take out in the value. And this is what he's talking about. It's the difference between our money transactions and the relationships of money. You will realize that we really are an expendable cog in the economic wheel of our society. Put money in its proper place is what he's saying to us. And this is his directive. So that we don't value, we're not identified by the balance we might have in our 401k or our retirement system. A lot of people get very reactionary when you talk about this in today's money economy. Well, I saw a really cool example of this week that hit me near the end of the week. And it helped to clarify that I was really struggling with this passage all week. But I think it's a little bit about what Jesus is trying to convey. My son, John, and I traveled to California. I had a niece that got married and a brother that's struggling with lung cancer. I was going to try to see both of them when I was out there, but it didn't happen. But what he did, we were able to attend the wedding. And my niece wanted to do this outside near Lake Tahoe and beautiful mountains. And it was going to be a beautiful family experience together to see the beautiful vistas of Lake Tahoe. She did get married in this beautiful lake that was close to Lake Tahoe. And for months and weeks, this part of California was unscathed by smoke. But 2 days before the wedding, the smoke grew thick. There were many, many fires. Some of them are naturally caused by sparks from lightning. Some are caused by aged vines that drop in the forest and then spark the fires. Some are intentional. Some are accidental. It was really, I think there were six when we were out there. But what we had to do was be relegated inside of our lodging for hours during these days when the air quality was so low that it really hurt to breathe. And we couldn't see any vista over a single mountain peak. Actually, when we came back, the smoke layer over the area was really visible from the plane as an overarching layer along the Earth's curvature. And my son and I were aghast at this. We were talking about our experience at this home. I mean, it was a beautiful wedding. I don't want to cast it aside. But this was really alarming to us because it created in us an environmental anxiety in a first-hand person. And these are occurrences that are the seasonal norm for my West Coast family. Before our experience, this was kind of a subjective idea, but to actually be immersed in it and move around it was really something else. I was really gladdened when I heard at the end of this week that there's a founder of a company called Patagonia. I don't know if anybody wears Patagonia sportswear. And he and his family are pledging his mouth. It's a $3 billion company. And he's going to use it all profits to fight climate crisis. And I likened him to the steward in the story who changed his mind and eased the poverty for farmers in Galilee. This man who owns Patagonia, it's an interesting story because he's a reluctant billionaire. He never wanted to be a businessman in the first place. But he's seeking to find solutions by creating what he's calling a trust of purpose instead of a trust of profit, a trust of purpose. And he recognizes the earth as our sole shareholder, not the person seeking profit. So he's kind of turning it up as well. And he's challenging others in the world to rearrange their priorities for relationships over profits, people over monetary gain, and climate health over exploitation. It's the organ of his business fairs that serves an example to me in this particular meeting. And I just think it's awesome to see business people act in that way. I commend these problem solvers. And so I also get the book to myself in a little tiny way in my little tiny corner of the planet of how do I contribute to this? How can I take a part? And it made me think of the Episcopal Church's code of creation here. We have one. And I've taken on the goal of exploring what that means. So we can learn as Episcopalians with others how our decisions as individuals and members of society directly influence God's creation. And I invite you to join me if you'd like to reflect and consider these resources that I'll give at the end of this sermon that you can link on and actually see what these are, going out into the environment and reflecting and meditating, thinking about a prayer of more stewardship of creation. And as such, you will do some reflection and decision-making about how God is calling you to be a more loving person, more liberating, and more life-giving in your relationship with the whole creation. I'd like to end this sermon with a prayer. Dear God, help us to realize that so much of what we value is fleeting, so that we may share what we've generously known of what is your eternal value, which is love and the generosity that we show to each other. In Jesus' name.